This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
A shorter campaign. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up during this program.
The race for the White House has been going on for more than a year, exhausting many voters. How can it be done more efficiently? We'll explain what it would take.
How cities around the country are marking the 15th anniversary of the 9/11 terror attacks.
On the tech front, how to get free radio on your smartphone and avoid data charges.
And the guy with the best seat at the U.S. Open? The man in charge of opening and closing the new roof at Arthur Ashe Stadium.
It's funny, it's not even a roof, it's more like an umbrella. It's not fitted onto the stadium itself. There's a bunch of columns that come up around the stadium, and it's a whole separate structure that goes over it. And the entire grounds here are built on an ash landfill, so you can't put something super heavy, heavier than what's already there, on there and have it. It's just going to make things sort of sink. So it was a very complicated design.
Wall Street Journal reporter Tom Perotta joins us later in the hour. Well, if you've heard enough about politics this year, join the crowd. But with the arrival of Labor Day this past Monday, at least it means we are within a stone's throw of the Election Day finish line. As of this coming Tuesday, there will be exactly 8 weeks until we choose our new president. That said, do the campaigns have to last this long? Jeff Jacoby, columnist at the Boston Globe, says in no other nation on earth do candidates for national leadership devote as much time to running for office. And it doesn't have to be that way. Jeff, what'd you write about?
Well, you know, this is the only country in the world, as far as I know, where candidates running for the top office, the top political office, start not a few months before the election, but almost a couple of years before the election. You know, Ted Cruz, when he announced that he was going to run for president in the 2016 election, made his announcement back, I think it was in April of 2015, that when Hillary Clinton ran for president the first time, that was for the November 2008 election, she made her announcement in March of 2007. This is crazy, and you don't have to be a Republican or a Democrat, a liberal or a conservative, to think that there's something wrong with so much of the oxygen in America being sucked up by a presidential campaign that just goes on and on and on and on. And the idea that somehow this is more democratic, or that it gives voters a good insight into the candidate's mettle and their stamina, is just crazy. Whatever benefit there might be is more than outweighed by the detriment. And among other things, the fact that presidential campaigns go on for so long doesn't increase voter interest in the election. It seems to decrease it. The longer the election campaigns get, the lower turnout finally is on when Election Day finally rolls around. So this is a piece about how people are just so fed up with having to get nothing but presidential politics over and over and over again, not just months, but almost literally years before the election is actually going to take place. They don't do it like this in Canada. They don't do it like this in England. They don't do it like this in France. I don't see any good reason why we keep doing it like this in America.
All right, so give some examples of those other countries, like Canada or England, for example. How long they do
it? Well, Canada had an election last fall after 10 years of a Conservative Party government. The voters went to the polls, and they gave Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party a pretty strong victory. That election campaign lasted 78 days from start to finish. It was the longest election campaign in Canada's history. Canadian newspapers were, you know, complaining that it was a marathon, that a campaign had never lasted so long. But by comparison with what we do over here, 78 days after the start of our presidential campaign, we were still having undercard debates with candidates like George Pataki and Jim Gilmore, and candidates who hadn't yet even thought about dropping out of the race. our candidate for barely clearing their throat in the amount of time that it took Canada to hold an election from start to finish. Are we better off because we make our things last so long? I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't want to tip off perhaps a next column, but what are the chances of reforming the system in some way, shape, or form?
Well, it's always hard to get change. Inertia is very powerful, but we've had changes in our political infrastructure in the past, and changes can be made to happen in the future. Part of it would require up from the grassroots pressure. I think part of it would also have to come from the top down. Maybe you couldn't get a sitting president to get involved in changing the system. But it might not be impossible to get former presidents, okay, especially if they were from both parties. Yeah. Let's imagine former President Bush and soon-to-be former President Obama joining forces to reform the presidential nominating system. If they could get together on a reform like that, they've both complained about how long the primary system is. If they could use some of their influence on a nonpartisan or bipartisan in a bipartisan manner, yeah, to push for reforms, that might make it possible.
Thanks, Jeff. Jeff Jacoby, columnist at the Boston Globe. He writes at the end of his piece, pretty much everything that's rotten with presidential campaigns, from the obscene sums spent by candidates to the relentless character assassination of political ads, is a function of their interminable length. It's 12 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us as you lace up your shoes for a workout this weekend. Are you part of the latest trend on the exercise front? And that's making triathlons a family affair. Wall Street Journal reporter Rachel Bachman says relatives are prodding each other in training, and children are competing with or even against their parents. It's another part of the growth of triathlons, driven largely by avid amateurs who turn the sport into a lifestyle. Rachel, what are you hearing?
A lot of triathletes will tell you there is a downside, and that is they create triathlete widows and widowers because they spend so much time training and competing. So what I found is there are a lot of people who basically have recruited their families to come with them and either train or compete or both in triathlons. So they don't have to spend all this time away from them.
Wow. So when they compete in these events, then, if, say, the father or the mother is the lead triathlete, do they tend to stay with the slower members of the group, or...?
Typically not, but there are a number of ways you can do this. You can just enter the race together and, kind of go your separate ways during the race and then reunite afterward.
Okay.
And a lot of these, I should say, kind of take up the whole weekend. You might have to travel somewhere, so you're still going to spend a lot of time with the person you go with. In other cases, there are relays, and so you actually are on a team with other folks, and you're, handing off from the swim to the bike or to the run, and some families do it that way as well. And there also are actually a few family divisions around the country where you can combine your times, and that's the contest between you and other teams.
Well, that's kind of neat. All right, so who are some of these families that you caught up with, by the way, who are doing this?
Well, probably the most interesting is the Loftus family based in Sturgis, South Dakota, and 9 of them entered a race in Beaver Creek, Colorado, I think it was last month, and just had a great time. And this all started almost a decade ago when the patriarch of the family, TJ, got into the triathlon and quickly realized he would not see much of his family if he didn't get them involved. So he got his wife going and kids and then their spouses, and it kind of branched off from there.
Wow, that's great. So 9 members of the family. How young, I guess, and are there age limits as part of that?
Well, it really depends on the race. I mean, I talked to a race director in Santa Barbara, California, for instance, who actually allows kids as young as 9 or 10 to compete. And these are obviously shorter triathlons than like an Ironman. But this race director allows kids to compete with their parents as long as their parents do stay with them the whole way. And as long as, they're proficient swimmers, that's number one, because they're swimming in the ocean. Other races, it just depends. There's a whole range of ways that they operate the kind of the competition.
How trendy is it right now, would you say?
Well, it's interesting. Some races I found this is one of the fastest growing categories, and others said that they had had really little interest in it. And so I think it really depends on kind of the history of the race and the part of the country you're in. These seem popular in California, and it just kind of depends on who shows up. You know, the Loftuses have been going to this race in Beaver Creek for, I think the first members started about 9 years ago, and so they've clearly made this a tradition and really built on it. I'm sure some other families have seen that and decided to do it as well.
The one point in the story too, you said emphasis is on participation. So what, no glamorous trophies for winners or anything like that, or what happens?
Well, that was referring to one race in particular, the one with the younger kids.
Okay.
I think the older the younger person is in the scenario, so like maybe you're racing with a teenage daughter who's 19, then the more competitive the races get, and generally the longer the distances get. So
yeah.
You know, at the younger ages, they're just finishing. I mean, that same race you mentioned doesn't actually publish like finishing results in order. They just publish them in alphabetical order, because they don't want kids who are, you know, 10 years old to be so concerned about where they finish. They want them just to finish. And, you know, they want to leave that really competitive stuff for later ages, at least till they get in their, you know, mid to late teens and kind of can take more responsibility for it.
Thanks, Rachel. Wall Street Journal reporter Rachel Bachman. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. How'd you like to listen to your local FM radio stations on your smartphone without streaming? To do it, you need to unlock your phone's ability to do it. And for that, there's an app called Next Radio. The man spearheading the effort is Jeff Smullyan, founder and CEO of MS Communications. Jeff, what should we know?
Gordon, what we found is that every smartphone in the world has an FM radio built in. What Next Radio is the interactive interface that allows that to come to life. And it really makes everything you listen to in your local market visual and interactive. So they can see what you're talking about on your show. If somebody's playing music, they can see the album. You can rate the record. You can send in questions during your show. If a station's having a promotion, you can immediately log it into your calendar. So if there's a concert, you could buy concert tickets. The idea is to make radio visual and interactive in the one device that people look at 160 times a day.
All right. Wow. All right. So
it's all free.
Right. So if the FM radio technology is already there, it sits there idle till you tap it?
Yeah, it has to be. We have to have an agreement with the carriers and the manufacturers to turn it on. So as of this week, we now have agreements with AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, U.S. Cellular, and now Verizon. So that if you buy, and just for the Android phones, we don't have an agreement with Apple yet. They're the last one. But if you have any Android phone that you've bought in the last year, you should be able to get it.
Wow, very good. So that would include the Samsungs, for example?
For example,
largely,
yes.
Yeah.
We are now available on every Samsung S7, which is not only America's, but the world's largest selling phone. If you buy one or have bought one in the last 8 or 9 months since they were introduced, you can download it immediately.
Okay, so what about, say, older model phones? What do we do with those?
Well, it depends. If they're older model Sprint phones or some older model phones, you have it. The best way to find out is just to go to the nextradioapp.com, and you can find out whether your phone has it or not. Or you can go to the Google Play Store on your phone, too.
Okay. And what about the Apple devices, then?
We're coming after them.
Okay.
One of the things, Gordon, that's interesting is there's a public safety aspect to this. And that's why, for example, the head of FEMA has said, you know, without this turned on, your cell phone is a brick in times of emergencies.
Yeah.
Because this is over-the-air radio. So if you listen to radio streaming and the power grid goes out, your cell system gets nothing.
Right.
And the same thing with television. Most televisions watch through the power grid. So what we've seen in every emergency, we just saw it again with the tornadoes and the flooding in Louisiana and the tornadoes in Oklahoma, is that when the power grid goes out, radio is the lifeline.
Mm.
And think of this really as just a Walkman, an over-the-air transistor radio that you turn on in your smartphone.
We're speaking with Jeff Smullyan. He's the founder and CEO of MS Communication. He's also been behind the Next Radio app, which is technology that brings you free local radio on your smartphone. Right. All right. So how does it work then? We got to go buy something or attach something to the phone?
You go to the nextradioapp.com and hit download. and it will download in your phone. If it's not compatible to your phone, you'll get a message. But if it's compatible, it'll download in, you know, 30 seconds. And you just hit the button and local radio comes on.
Very good. So it'd be like in the old days, traveling in your car. When you made it to the next city, you automatically started picking up the local radio stations, and you lost the ones from the last city.
Exactly. Think of it as a local radio.
Yeah.
And it's all over the air. There's no streaming. Remember, the benefit is you don't pay any data costs with this. When you stream a local radio station, you pay data costs. Now, for the broadcaster, you also pay music licensing fees, and it drains your battery about five times less. So you can listen to something on Next Radio for 10 hours that will drain your battery in 2 hours listening to the same exact thing through streaming.
Wow. How will the app make money, Jeff? What's the business model behind it?
Well, the business model for the industry is that we can sell new interactive advertising. So we've sold, let's say, McDonald's an ad for Egg McMuffins for 60 years. Now when we sell them one, we can also sell them interactivity.
Okay.
So the ad comes on the air like it always does. They talk about Egg McMuffins. At the same time, a visual will pop up in your phone, and you can hit a coupon and go to a store and redeem it and get a discount on Egg McMuffins. So anything an advertiser talks about on the air, we can make visual and interactive. If they want to direct you to a website or directions to their location, everything that they talk about on the air can be matched up simultaneously through this. And that's brand new revenue for broadcasters.
Thanks, Jeff. Jeff Smullyan, he's the founder and CEO of Emmis Communications and the guy pushing the Next Radio app. Again, pulls in your signal from your local FM radio stations, just like your car would. Now you can listen without streaming on your phone, which obviously can cost you data charges. You can read more at nextradioapp.com. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
Thanks for being with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Glad you could spend part of your weekend here. Coming up this half hour, how to stop being so tight-fisted with your money, getting rid of the negativity in your life, specifically the people who bring it. And the new technology at the U.S. Open has nothing to do with tennis equipment. That story in about 15 minutes. Well, Americans were expected to spend an average of $941 per person on summer getaways this year, according to a survey from American Express. Were you in that group? My family was. Here's someone, though, who usually isn't, but did take the plunge this summer. Market Watch reporter Maria LaMagna, who gave herself a reprieve this summer from being a penny pincher. Maria, what'd you do?
This kind of started as like a mental health project, just, you know, I wrote about in my piece that I keep myself to a pretty regulated kind of lifestyle. And so before the summer started, I thought, what can I give myself a break from, you know, really make summer relaxing? And then that ended up having some money implications also. But yeah, before the summer, you know, I babysit for some extra money. I'm pretty careful with the money that I own, that I earn for my full-time job. So, yeah, crazy spending is not something that I typically do, but decided to give myself a little bit of a break for the summer.
Wow. All right. So what did you do?
So for me, that mostly meant some weekend trips, and also just saying yes more to friends wanting to do something after work or on a weekend. You know, I often decline those kind of invitations, and I just decided, you know, what would happen if I just started saying yes to all of them instead. So, you know, it kind of ran the gamut. I did some more expensive things. You know, I splurged and took a trip to the Hamptons, but then I did some less expensive things like just going to a movie or going to a Yankee game and sitting in the bleacher seat. So, you know, I tried a variety of things at different price points to see what I actually enjoyed doing the most.
All right, so are you a budgeter, and what did that do to your budget, say? How did you manage that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I am a budgeter. I don't keep an official budget, like using an app or anything like that, but I kind of keep a mental budget, and I try to put a certain amount of money away every month. I just automatically shift it from my checking account into my savings account, so I had a little bit of a cushion going into the summer just based on doing that, and I try not to dip too much into my emergency fund, which I also keep. You know, personal finance experts tend to say you should have 3 to 6 months savings stored away just in case something happens. So, you know, I try to keep that there, but then I think you can create a little bit of wiggle room for yourself if you are willing to do some side hustle type of jobs or, you know, just be extra thrifty during the regular months.
I'm speaking with Maria LaMagna, Market Watch reporter. Her piece is called "I Stopped Worrying About Money and Had Fun This Summer. Here's What I Learned." So what are some of the takeaways? Did anything surprise you in terms of these lessons learned?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most important lessons I learned, which I will definitely take going forward, is kind of a cliche, but I will honestly say some of the more expensive things were not necessarily the things that I enjoyed doing the most. So I think it was a good experimental time to try some of those things out and realize that, you know, the big ticket items are not always the things that I enjoy the most. So I think that's an important lesson for anyone to learn. Maybe you do have champagne taste, but, you know, sometimes I feel like I don't. So it was kind of nice to sample those things out and then decide, okay, I don't necessarily need to do that again. So that was an important takeaway. And I think also, you know, since I write about personal finance all the time and read a lot of about personal finance, you can get caught up in all of these smart decisions, which obviously are very important to make. But I realized too, you know, there is something to be said for happiness and for being young once and taking advantage of travel while you can and all of that. So I think I would, you know, I would never ever say spend all your money and don't worry about it anymore. But I think there is something to be said for, in the midst of all of this good financial advice, you can let yourself enjoy your life too.
Thanks, Maria. Market Watch reporter Maria LaMagna. It's 21 minutes now before the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. Want less stress in your life even as the hectic back-to-school period begins? One way to do it is to avoid the people in your life who are exhausting. Here's how, from Christopher Macklin, expert in alternative health. Chris, help us out.
To be honest, if you look at the whole world, it's pretty messed up right now. There's a lot of depressed people and people who suck your energy. They complain about things all the time. They don't see the blessing in life. You know, it's so easy to complain. It's much more difficult to sit back and think, you know, what are the blessings in life? And they're all around you. You just got to look for them. And I think, you know, sometimes if you start being grateful, you can shift your whole mindset into a new reality. You know, you can become very happy and joyful because, you know, looking at the blessings instead of the things you haven't got, you know, and then the things you haven't got manifest into your life, you know.
These are the people who are always negative or complaining about something, generally?
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of people are, actually. You know, they complain about government or money or something, you know, but it's my true belief that if you focus on your mindset around you, say 5 feet around you, and look at your life and just focus on the life and think, well, I've got a blessing, I've got a house, I've got a car, you know, I've got a job. You know, if you've got a job, that's good. It's a good start, you know, because a lot of people don't. You've got food on the table, a lot of people don't, you know. So you have to look at the blessings in life, and I think it's really important, you know, if people are trying to suck your energy and complain a lot about things, bless them, but don't take that energy on. It's easy to engage with you know, sympathy and everything else. You can be compassionate, but I don't think you should be engaging. It's their journey, you know, and they've got to shift it. You know, they're only in that place because of themselves and the way they feel.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can bless them and love them for who they are, but don't suck that energy in because it'll affect you. I mean, if you look at research, they've researched, and energy is stored in the heart. You know, it builds up like a layer of onion, negative energy and emotions and things like this. And we do a lot of releasing, you know. Sickness seems to come from mainly emotion. It's like, for example, you know, if someone in the family commits suicide, mom, dad died, something, then people seem to get cancer a few years later. And it's because the vibration drops and then fungal infections start start mutating, turn into cancer growth. And we've got rid of cancer really easy. Cancer's a mere symptom. It's like the common cold. The cause is what's important to release, because if you chop the cancer out or fry it or poison it, you know, with chemo, that's great, it's gone. But it will come back because the cause has not disappeared. So it's so important to get rid of the cause in all these things.
Yeah, it's got to be hard, though, to not take on somebody's negative energy. How do you do that? Because if you're listening and trying to be sympathetic, right, you get caught up in the emotion of it. You can't just cut them off and say, I'm done, right?
Oh, no, you never do that. But what you got to do is create a wall and think, that energy is not going to come into me. You know, I'm going to love them. I'm going to bless them, love them. and listen, but don't internalize that, because it's so important. If you internalize that, it'll make you sick as well. And so, you know, like I say, have the compassion. It's important to look at the positive things in life all the time.
We're speaking with Christopher Macklin, alternative health expert, about how to handle the exhausting people in your life. What if the tables were turned? Maybe you're the exhausting person and you don't know it. What are the signs?
Right, the signs are normally, you know, you get depression. I mean, if you look at some of these things and you get depression, you just don't, you know, you feel numb. You don't feel joy. You don't feel pain. You don't feel sadness. You just feel absolutely nothing. You become numb and emotive. And I think when you start feeling like that, you know, you shouldn't, because human beings have got emotions. They've got love. They've got joy. They've got all these things. And therefore, if you become emotive, you can tell that, you know, and it's depression, you know. And so it's important to seek some help. You know, or start using the techniques where you think about positivity all day. Think about the gratitude of life. What's happened in your life that you're grateful for? Because there's always many things, you know. It's like in America right today, you know, people always report the negative things. What about the millions and millions of good deeds that are done in America right today? There's probably 20, 50, 100 million things, like Betty in the soup kitchen. She's been there for 20 years. Someone goes to someone on the street, gives them $20 because they're on the street. All these things, you know, you have to focus on the positivity, I think, and get yourself out the negative mindset, you know. So,
thanks, Chris. Chris Macklin, expert in alternative health. It's 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On this weekend, thanks for spending time with us. The U.S. Open tennis tournament wraps up this weekend in New York. Who's got the best seat to watch the world's best players? The ball boys? The chair umpire? The coaches? Turns out it might be the guy responsible for operating the new roof at Arthur Ashe Stadium. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
Lots of new faces at this year's U.S. Open Tennis Championship in New York, and lots of new equipment, including a sparkling new retractable roof over Arthur Ashe Stadium. Tom Parato, The Wall Street Journal, is here to tell us more about the tournament's improvements. Tom, let's start with that roof. How and why did this come about?
Well, the tournament was rained out. The final was rained out 5 years in a row. It had to be extended. I think it was five. I don't know. It seemed like it went on forever. We always had a Monday final. It got to the point where they just made the final on Monday because the rain had come so much. And that hurt TV, and that hurts fans and ticket sales, and nobody likes to come here and then have to go home and not see any tennis. So they've been trying to do it for years and finally figured out a way to make it light enough that it would actually fit.
You talk about it being light enough. How does it actually work?
It's funny. It's not even a roof. It's more like an umbrella. It's not fitted onto the stadium itself. There's a bunch of columns that come up around the stadium, and it's a whole separate structure that goes over it. And the entire grounds here are built on an ash landfill, so you can't put something super heavy, heavier than what's already there, on there and have it. It's just going to make things sort of sink. So it was a very complicated design, and it took years for them to figure out a way to make it sort of light enough that it would stay up and work.
And so far, so good. How much has it been used this tournament?
It's been used several times. It's come in handy. There hasn't been much rain, which is funny. A lot of players joked about that. Now that we have the roof, it'll never rain again. But it did come in very handy in one night match, and it's been closed a few other times too. And then maybe some showers in the forecast the next few days as well.
Now, Tom, your story in the Wall Street Journal is about the engineers behind the roof. And a guy whose job is to monitor things. How did that go about?
I was really happy to meet him. It was a lot of fun. I mean, somebody has to be up there all the time. And the interesting thing about this place compared to the other tennis tournaments is that he actually has a view of the court. He's got a nice big window up there, whereas the other tournaments, people are sort of out in the basement, you know, and don't see anything all day. So he's loving it up there. They have to wait for the tournament referee to signal in, and then they've got to start conditioning the stadium, turn the fans on, press the buttons, and then have the thing close.
How did the roof affect or not affect play this year?
Well, it's saved a few matches at night that would have been delayed, and there was one day where it rained a lot. So it's kept some players on schedule. They only have one. They're planning on building a second one, which will help even more, because at least what you have now, the bigger players are going to get their matches in. But if you have a ton of rain, you're still going to have a schedule that's kind of backed up and unfair to players who are not playing on the main stadium.
But without the total washouts, are the crowds bigger this year than ever?
They're selling more tickets, for sure, because the grounds have been improved. There's a new grandstand court. There's other courts that they've added more seating to them. There's more places to eat. Things have been spread out a bit. So they set a couple records. There's over 40,000 tickets a couple days in a row, so attendance has gone up because they have more places for people to go.
That is this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Tom Perotta from the Wall Street Journal. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Glad you're with us. This weekend is the 15th anniversary of the September 11 attacks. There are scores of memorial events around the country, in addition to the main places such as New York City, the Pentagon, and Shanksville, Pennsylvania. In southern Alabama, there's a touching tribute at Shiloh Baptist Church in Saraland, just north of Mobile. They're putting out nearly 3,000 American flags to represent each victim who died that day. The pastor says they'll have 2,977 American flags covering 4 acres of church property. Each flag will have the name of a victim. In Southern California, the annual San Diego 9/11 Memorial Stair Climb is Saturday morning, one of about 30 similar climbs nationwide. California Lutheran University will mark the 15-year anniversary with a faculty recital that will include music, poetry, and a multimedia presentation Saturday evening on the campus in Thousand Oaks. And in Connecticut, the 2016 CT United Ride is likely to be the biggest ever, with as many as 5,000 riders, including firefighters from 10 different states. An estimated 15,000 spectators are expected to line the route. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. If you're looking to grow or relocate your business, there are three numbers you should know. 10, 2000, and 6. 10 stands for Michigan being one of America's top 10 states for business. 2000 is the number of burdensome regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years. And 6 stands for Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climates. All those numbers add up to the one state that has all that and more. Michigan. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. That's MichiganBusiness.org to learn more.